Thank you. I appreciate the prayer that has gone before and do ask the continuance in prayer. Thoroughly enjoyed the song service and echo Brother Ward's sentiments in how wonderful it is to be able to feel the spirit in the song service and for the participation of the congregation. I think it's so critical to the worship service and critical part of the worship service, and very thankful for it. I did not know that about Fred. Didn't know Fred all that well, just really our trips to Houston. Didn't realize that he was not a member. that's a good testimony right there. It reminded me of another, you said that was your that was your good Catholic deacon. It reminded me of a good Methodist deacon that Dad used to refer to, a gentleman by the name of M.L. Binky at the Grace Primitive Baptist Church in Houston. Never joined. He's a Methodist to the day he died, but he was so faithful to come. And of course, his wife was a member of the church. But he's a wonderful, wonderful man, so gentle that I can remember, and mine went to that. Also went to another gentleman down in Harlingen, Texas. His name just...
Harris.
Yeah, Harris. Leland. Leland Harris. He was... an attendee at the Combs Church in near Harlingen, Texas, and he never joined, but he was always there, and he was always working, and it's a wonderful testimony to him and his personality, and I believe the spirit that was in him. But if you asked him why he wouldn't join, his response was always, "I'm just not worthy." And if any of us were, or if all of us were to think about our worthiness in and of ourselves, then the church would be empty. Because like Brother Ward said, none of us are worthy of anything that we do or anything that we can come up with to be a part of the church. But God has made us worthy. He's made us worthy. He has called us out as the church to worship him. Though unworthy as we are, yet in that attitude of unworthiness comes the greatest blessings at the hand of God to his children when they worship him. So it's good to realize how unworthy we are, but at the same time, it's not something that ought to keep us out of the church. It ought to be something that brings us to the church in considering our unworthiness and that what Jesus Christ has done for us to make us worthy by his blood. There is a character in the Bible, many characters in the Bible, but the one I want to talk about this morning, who was also unworthy. And when I say his name, you're going to be like, huh? He wasn't worthy? There was a man by the name of Moses who is probably one of the most well-known characters of the Bible in that he was the one that brought the children of Israel out of Egyptian captivity to the banks of Jordan's river. And you would think, how can somebody say that he wasn't worthy to do what he did? But it's not me, it's the Bible. The Bible tells us that. Now, I'd like to take a text out of the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews. It's about Moses, and it's really interesting that as the Apostle Paul runs down this faith hall of fame, if you want to call it that, that he ends really with Moses and the children of Israel before he says, and you know, what shall we say about the others? We don't have time. So Hebrews chapter 11, and we'll read from verse 24, but verse 26, Lord willing, is my text. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. So you read that. And it's 100% true. There is no falsehood that the Apostle Paul presented in talking about Moses. But if we just read this, somebody could say, well, what a worthy man to be called of God to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt. He says, by faith, Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So in our minds, or at least in my mind, I can see that when, you know, in just looking at this, when Moses came of age, he approached Pharaoh and said, I just realized that I'm not Egyptian, I'm an Israelite, and I'm going to refuse to be called your son, and turned around and walked out. I mean, that's what, you know, the whole mic drop thing, you know, to say all that, drop the mic and walk out of the king's palace. And then go out and then triumphantly lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. You know, I mean, you can conjure that up in your mind. Now, I like it. Paul's not bearing false witness. Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He did refuse. But how he got there is really interesting. And how he got there should relate to how we got where we are. So, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Again, you could think he said that to Pharaoh. I'm an Israelite. I'm not an Egyptian. I refuse to be called your son or the son of your daughter. And he walks out and he joins the children of Israel in the mud pits making bricks and does all that. You know, you could conjure that up in your mind. Esteeming the reproach of Christ. Now, that's an interesting one, right? This is our text. Esteeming the reproach of Christ. Hang on a second. Jesus Christ is still about 3,500 years in the making, right? And when I say that, I'm talking about his birth. He's the eternal Son of God. But it's about 3,500 years away by the time Jesus Christ is born of the Virgin Mary. And yet Paul said that what Moses did in verse 24 and 25 was esteeming the reproach of Christ to be greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. The key to this whole text is the word respect. He had respect to the recompense of the reward. Now, let's go over to the book of Exodus. We'll hold our place there in the book of Hebrews for just a little while. Let's go over to the book of Exodus, and let's find out about Moses, and let's see if we can reconcile what the book of Exodus says with what the Apostle Paul just got through writing to us. The end of the chapter 1 shows the death of the Pharaoh that knew Joseph and respected him, and the rising up of another Pharaoh that feared the conquest of Israel over Egypt. And so he did a heinous act by killing all the newborn male children to prevent the further growth of Israel. But as you can see, God, in his wisdom and his moving among his people, took care of that too. Even the greatest, the most heinous act of man cannot overthrow the will of God nor the purpose of God in dealing with his people. That's a good note to remember from the chapter 1. Chapter 2, it talks about a woman of the house of Levi that was with child, and she had a son. His name was Moses, and they named him Moses. And for fear of him being slaughtered as well, they put him in a basket and set him off in the river, and Pharaoh's daughter found him. And so she gave it to a nurse and said, nurse this child. And he grew up, and it says in chapter 2, verse 10, and the child grew, and she brought him in unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So it was, you might say, it was Egyptian adoption, right? It wasn't her biological son. It was her adopted son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, because I drew him out of the water. Verse 11, and it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown. So he is an adult now. Moses is grown, that he went out unto his brethren. Now, you could say, well, Moses didn't know it was his brethren. There, the writer just said, well, number one, the writer of this book is Moses. All right, so there's nothing hidden in this. You say, well, wait a minute. It says when he was of age, Paul said when he was of age, he said, I'm not going to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I'd rather suffer the afflictions of my people than the pleasures of sin for a season. So when Moses was grown, he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren. Moses knew who his brethren were. Moses is a grown man, and Moses, as of right this moment, is still a member of the house of Pharaoh. He's still called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So you've got to understand when the Apostle Paul is writing, by faith Moses refused, that there is an aspect that the Apostle Paul is going straight, he's cutting straight to the chase, but there is a backstory that's so important, and don't we all have a backstory? Every one of us has a backstory. There's a backstory that's so important to the identification of Moses with us in our lives. It is paramount to understanding why we sometimes think how we think and how what we do, why we do the things that we do. So he saw an Egyptian smiting. So this Egyptian was beating this Israelite. And Moses knew that that was his, that he was an Israelite. So what did he do? Did he go out there and say, hang on, let's not do this? No, he killed him. He killed him. He killed the Egyptian. Now, we could say, well, he was justified. He was justified. He did the right thing. Because the Egyptian was beating one of his brethren. The scripture won't bear that out. In fact, Moses knew he had done wrong. You know why? Because he buried the Egyptian in the desert. And then, you know what Moses did? He went about his day. Went back to the palace. Everything's fine. Nobody knows a thing. And probably, this is Mark now, not scripture. Probably he's thinking, and I saved the life of that Israelite. He's not going to say anything. The next day he goes back out. Now he comes up on two Israelites arguing and fighting. And he says, brethren, this ought not be so. You ought not be fighting. And you know what they do? They say, oh, are you going to kill us too? I'm telling you what, that is scary. That is scary. Moses took the life of an Egyptian. He tried to hide it. And then he realized, oh my goodness, that fellow that I saved, he's running around saying, you better watch out for that Moses guy. You better watch out for him. Because as far as they were concerned, that was Pharaoh's daughter's son. He had forsaken Israel. He was a grown man, and he knew what his heritage was, yet he was in the house of Pharaoh. So they said, are you going to kill us too? And you know what Moses did? He took off running. He took off running. He fled. And then Pharaoh found out about it. And Pharaoh starts looking for him so Pharaoh can take his life. And Moses has run off to the backside of the desert. And he landed over here somewhere where there was a man by the name of Jethro. And Moses actually helped his daughters at the well from some unruly characters. So Moses ends up marrying one of Jethro's daughters. I don't remember her name. It's not important in this classification. But he marries one of his daughters. And he has a son. And he becomes a shepherd working for his father-in-law. Now, I'm not sure just how many years have passed since he killed that Egyptian and fled. Oh, by the way, when he fled, he didn't run into Pharaoh and say, you know what? I don't want to be called the son of your daughter. These are my people out here. He didn't go in there and say that. You know what he did? He took off running at the first sign of the realization that he had committed a crime, a very heinous crime, and he had been found out, even though he tried to hide it. And so he runs out into the desert to get away from Egypt. And then, like I said, I don't know how long he's out here, but he's out here long enough to get married, to have a son, and to have a settle in at a really nice job being a shepherd over his father-in-law's flocks. Now remember, he had respect. So, now, we've read all of that, or we've talked about all of that. Go back to Hebrews chapter 11, and it says, by faith Moses refused. Well, I hadn't seen any refusal yet to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Rather, spending his life in the afflictions of his brethren than enjoying the pleasures of sin for a season. I hadn't seen that yet either. Hadn't seen it. Now, respect. For he had respect to the recompense of reward. Recompense of the reward. That word respect literally means, and you'll have to bear with me, my allergies are off the scales. That word respect literally means a turning to a single or a sole focus. Now, if you look at Moses' life up to this point, you might say, well, there's a sole focus. He was out to save his life. That's not what Paul's talking about. Turning to a singular focus. Now, Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Oreb. So this is the mountain of God. This is the mountain range that Mount Sinai is the anchor of. There's another mountain range called Kadesh, and the anchor of Kadesh is Mount Zion. Now, there's some wonderful allegory to be found talking about the mountain range of Oreb and the mountain range of Kadesh, but we won't get into that. Let it be known, though, the mountain range of Oreb contained the Mount Sinai. So he's got his sheep up there, and it says in verse 2, and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Verse 3, and Moses said, I will now turn aside. I will now turn aside and see this great sight why the bush is not burned. It's a very innocent statement, right? You say, well, all he's saying is, oh, I'm going to turn over here and look at this bush that's on fire, but it's not being consumed. But remember, he had more respect for the recompense, for what the reward had in store, than anything that Egypt had to offer. So he says, I will turn aside. You know what that means? He's going to have respect for this bush that's burning and is not consumed. That became his singular focus. He said, I gotta go look at this. I mean, wouldn't we do the same thing? I gotta go look at this. There's this bush that's on fire, but it's not being burned up. I need to go look at this. And I submit to you that in going to look at it, I don't believe that Moses knew just exactly what was about to happen. I'm sure he thought it was some kind of phenomena. Just, what is going on over here? All right. And when the Lord, verse 4, and when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, it says it again. In other words, the Lord says, okay, now I've got your attention. Have you ever had something like that happen in your life? That you've been doing something over here? Maybe you ought not be doing it. Maybe it's ambiguous. Maybe there's nothing wrong in it, but you're doing something over here. And then something happens and you think, I ought to pay attention to this. And then when you pay attention to this, and the Lord sees you pay attention to this, that the Lord does something miraculous in your life. And you weren't, maybe you weren't expecting it. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. Now that got Moses' attention if the burning bush did not. And we know the burning bush did. And now the burning bush is talking. And now Moses is talking back to the burning bush. Here am I. And he said, draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am, here's the great revelation. I am the God of thy father. Not Pharaoh, not Pharaoh's daughter's husband, but I'm the God of thy father. Whoever his father was of the tribe of Levi, I am thy father's God. Then he goes on to say, now let me tell you exactly who I am. I'm the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Moses instantly realized just who it was that was speaking to him. It was the great Elohim, the great God of all creation, the great God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moses knew who those names were. Moses knew who those men were. These were great men that fell in line in a lineage to that very day. And God continues to say that he's the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob for a specific reason. You know what that is? To remind Moses and the children of Israel and us that God does not forget his promises. I'm the God of Abraham. Oh, I remember Dad telling me about Abraham and about what happened to him and about how he was so faithful. And I'm the God of Isaac. Oh, I remember hearing about Isaac and how Moses took him up in the land of Moriah to a mountain and offered him up. I've heard about Jehovah Jireh. Maybe he's seen it. I don't know. And I'm the God of Jacob. Oh, I've heard about Jacob and what God promised Jacob. And I remember when God changed Jacob's name to Israel because he was the prince of the nations. You see? I'm the God. Moreover, God said, I'm the God of Abraham, God of thy father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Moses knew who he was. He hid his face so he wouldn't look upon God. And then in verse 7 it says, and the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrow. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now, therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh. Uh-oh. That thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Then Moses does what I would have done. Lord, you got the wrong guy. Who am I to Pharaoh? You know what? You know what's going through Moses, back of Moses' mind right here? I killed somebody. I took a life. Not just anybody. I took an Egyptian life. And I heard that Pharaoh wants me dead. Now, I know this. The Pharaoh that was ruling when Moses left has since died. And his son now has taken the throne. Moses says, who am I before Pharaoh? And I mean, you can read chapter 3 and chapter 4. If you think you are a great arguer, you ain't got nothing on Moses. I mean, he throws everything in the book at God about why God, basically he's saying, Lord, you made a big mistake. But the problem is the Lord doesn't make mistakes. Wait a minute, Lord, did you not see what happened in Egypt when I took the life of another human being? When I committed murder? Unjustifiable murder, I might add. Did you not see that? He says, I've got a stammering tongue. I can't speak well. I'm not some orator that can bring flowery language. You've got the wrong guy. I'm not worthy. Huh. Now, let's pause that. Let's go back to the book of Hebrews in the 11th chapter. I'm not worthy. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years. Well, it can't be simply that when he was grown, because the scripture says when he was grown, he was still the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So it must have been come to something else, not just years by way of age, right? When he was come, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years. Like I said, I don't know how many years passed, but quite a few years passed from the time of his fleeing Egypt to the time of his having respect and God seeing that he had respect to that burning bush, and then God seeing that he had respect unto him, even though he argued with him. I think last time I was here, I talked about, but when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law to redeem them that were under the law. The fullness of the time, I believe the fullness of the time of Christ came, and it came exactly when God ordained it to come. But I believe, by virtue of reconciling Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24, with Exodus chapters 2 and 3, that Moses' time had come. That his time had come. In other words, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, and it was time, God could have appeared to Moses before he ever fled Egypt. In fact, somebody would say, well, why didn't he? It would have been a lot easier. The logistics would have been a lot simpler had Moses simply been in Egypt. In fact, Lord, the logistics would have been even a whole lot more simpler if you'd have just not kept hardening Pharaoh's heart. And Paul addresses that in the 9th chapter of the book of Romans. It makes you think, doesn't it? You know, a plague would come. Pharaoh would say, okay, go. But before they could get anything going on, it says, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. And he says, no, you can't go. And you sit there and think, why? Why? Because it has meaning for us. And it had meaning for them. The realization of what was required to bring Israel out of Egypt wasn't just that God could, because this, you got to be really careful. There's nothing impossible with God, and if his purpose would have been to bring Egypt, to bring Israel out instantaneously, he could have done it. In fact, if his purpose was not even to have Israel go into Egypt in the first place, he could have done it, right? But that's all supposition. That's all second guessing. The scriptures say they went down to Egypt. Everything was great in Egypt. Then the Pharaoh rose up who didn't know Joseph. Things got bad in Egypt. Things got really bad in Egypt for hundreds of years. And then this Moses guy comes along, and he's a murderer. He's got a stammering tongue. And he is a coward. Instead of staying and accepting his due punishment, he flees and he goes and hides. And then God finds him on the backside of the desert. I like the backside of the desert. I'm telling you what, we find ourselves on the backside of the desert, and it's not a whole lot of fun. But I like this one thing, that on the backside of the desert is where God likes to find his children. Because the time is right, and the time was right for Moses. And you say, but he argued with God. I would have too, and so would you. But the time was right for Moses. And he turned aside. He forgot about the flock. He forgot about his father-in-law. He saw a bush that burned. And he turned aside to see it. And God said, okay, Moses just had respect for that bush. Now he's going to have respect for me. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you know what? Moses immediately had respect for God, because not only did he take off his shoes, but he buried his face in the sand. He refused to look at God. He knew who it was by virtue of his powerful voice speaking to him and by virtue of the Spirit reigning in him. It was his time, and he had respect. So, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, so we're on the backside of the desert, he's come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He didn't go back into Egypt and say, don't forget who I am. I am the adopted son of Pharaoh's daughter. In fact, at this point, when he went back to Egypt, I'm pretty sure that Pharaoh was his adoptive mother's brother, which make him his uncle. Refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He didn't go back and say, remember me? Don't forget, I'm Egyptian by adoption, so you've got to be, I've got a stake in this. He didn't do that. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God, and the afflictions were coming. You say, well, I thought the afflictions were already there. They were, but here comes Moses' afflictions with the people of God. What did he do? He went in, let my people go. And he was scoffed. He was laughed at. He was ridiculed. The most powerful nation in the world at that time. And this guy, this shepherd comes in, this murderer comes in saying, let my people go. No, I'm not going to let the Lord's people go. This is great for my economy. 10 times, right? Weren't there 10 plagues? Yeah, 10 times. 10 plagues. The first 5, Pharaoh was tricked by his magicians, because they were able to mimic what Moses had done. But on number 6, they couldn't do it. You ever wonder what went through Pharaoh's mind in all of this? Doesn't matter. That's not our focal point. Holy moly, that clock is fast. 6, 7, 8, 9. Pretty, go back and read them. Bad stuff. I got to hurry. But this last one, you say, why didn't God do this? Why didn't God do that? Here's why. Here's the last one. Refusing to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ, I don't even need to leave that mark, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect and the recompense of the reward. Plague number 10. Everybody knows what plague number 10 is, right? It's the death of the firstborn. And God said, here's what we're going to do. You're going to take a kid or a lamb. You're going to separate it out for 7 days because it's got to be without blemish and spot. It's got to be perfect. And then you're going to kill that lamb, and you're going to take the blood of that lamb, and you're going to strike the doorpost and the lintel across with that blood. And I like this. He says, and I will visit Egypt tonight. Don't be fooled by other people. Say, well, he sent the angel away. He said, I will visit Egypt tonight. And I will strike dead the firstborn of every family. And he didn't even stop with human beings. He went out to the cattle of the field. Firstborn's going to die. Unless and only because blood is struck on the doorpost and the lintel of that house. He says, when I see the blood, I will pass over you and all that are in the house. Brothers and sisters, God went down to Egypt that night looking for one thing, and that was blood. And when he saw the blood, he passed over the house. That's why it's called the Passover Supper. He tells them what to eat and what to do and all of that. We don't have time. That's why it's called the Passover Supper. But I submit to you that when God went down to Egypt that night, every time he saw the blood on the doorpost, that he indeed saw the physical blood of whatever sheep or goat had given its life to put that blood there, but his mind was taken to a greater place of better blood and of a better testament to that blood, his son, Jesus Christ, on Calvary's cross. So when he saw that blood, he's like, there's the blood. And his mind immediately went to Calvary. You see what God's purpose in all of this was? It was to glorify his name by the implementation of that Passover that would continually remind Israel that God requires blood to save not just the firstborn, but every born child of grace. He requires the blood, and not blood that we strike on that, but the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. Now we see it. Now we see the whole domino effect of all these events that got us here. And that very night, Pharaoh sends word to Moses, get out. Because there was a cry in the land that night. And it wasn't wrought by the hands of men. It was wrought by the hands of a just and holy and righteous God. And Pharaoh says, get out. And God says, and when you leave, he said, you take the spoils of Egypt with you. You take everything that you can carry and you go out and I'll lead you. And they get to the Red Sea. Now, Moses went from a conniving murderer to the servant of God that's probably one of the most well-known Old Testament servants to leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. I'm telling you what, when he turned that day and saw that burning bush, he didn't realize just how that turning was going to completely alter the course of his life. Brothers and sisters, when God shows us something and we turn, I'm telling you, it will completely alter the course of your life. You say, Brother Mark, what are you talking about? I'm talking about being in the Church of Jesus Christ today. It will alter your life. It will make you realize. And was Moses worthy of this calling? No, he wasn't worthy. Not in and of himself. But he was made worthy by the same blood that God saw in Egypt that night, the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. He was made worthy by that. We're not worthy, but we're made worthy. And when God shows us something, you know what we should do? We should have respect to it. We should turn aside. We should say, I'm going to go see what this is. Maybe this is the hand of God. So out they go. Now, what's the reward? A lot of people say, well, he had recompense of the reward in heaven and immortal glory. I have a really hard time with that with this context. So out they go. You think everything's good now, right? You know what God does? You're not going to believe this. He hardens Pharaoh's heart again. And you would think, why did he do that? Why didn't he just let him go? Because God is going to show that it's not Moses' power that brought Israel out, it's God's power. And so he hardens Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh rallies his armies, and they bear down on him on the banks of the Red Sea. And Israel says, oh, we're not worried. He brought us this far. Everything will be fine. No. You know what Israel does? They want to, like, hog-tie Moses and say, here, Pharaoh, you take him and kill him. We'll come back, and we'll do all that work. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, that's... But when faced with almost guaranteed death and the intense taskmasters that were there, we'll choose life. Human beings will choose life because it's natural. So here comes Pharaoh's army. And I mean, they're railing on Moses. And Moses doesn't say, let me show you what I'm going to do. He says, stand still. All right, we've turned aside. We've seen the power of God. Now what do? Stand still. Because when we see that, it's not just for a suggestion or some passing by kind of a thought. We're going to see just what God is going to do among his people. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And God parted the Red Sea, and they went across. God is a good, he's got good strategy too, by the way. You see, Pharaoh, they might have got across the Red Sea. Pharaoh may have never chased them down. And then Pharaoh got mad. He could have run them down out in the wilderness and slaughtered them. But God says, you know what? I'm going to take care of that too. He opened up the Red Sea for Israel. And then when the Egyptians got down there, he closed it in on them and destroyed the Egyptian army, such that the children of Israel could say that Egypt will never plague us again. See what happens when you have respect to the recompense of the reward? Murder's bad. Thou shalt not kill, right? Moses committed another sin. He struck a rock that God said to speak to. And God said, Moses, because of that, you're not going to receive the reward. Took it away from him. Moses had respect to the recompense or the receiving of that reward. Not in and of the fact that he would do all these things to deserve the reward, but that he knew God's purpose in that, that the end game for Israel in that day and age was to cross Jordan's River and inhabit a land that God gave to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. You see how God works in this? And you say, well, that's great, Brother Mark. That's great for Moses. That's great for Israel. What does that have to do with me? God hadn't changed the way he works. He hadn't changed the way he works. And we've crossed into Canaan's land. We've crossed the river of Jordan, right into Canaan's land. Jordan isn't a biblical representation of death. Jordan's a biblical representation, if you'll allow me, of baptism into the church of Jesus Christ. We all pass through Jordan, and here we are in Canaan's land. And we still have a respect to the recompense of the reward that God gives. He says, behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me. He didn't say your reward. He said my reward. But he shares that because we are more than conquerors through him and what he did. And so he brings his reward with him, and we become recipients of his reward in the house of God. Is it during song service? Yes. Is it during prayer? Yes. Is it during preaching? Yes. I'll even submit to you that it's even in fellowship that we are rewarded by the reward of Jesus Christ for turning aside. And you think, well, that's really easy then, right? It's really easy to turn aside. And there's a lot more that I'm just leaving out. It's real easy to turn aside. Go to the 22nd chapter of the book of, go to the 22nd Psalms, and you'll see about the reproach of Christ. Turning aside means taking on the reproach of Christ. Brothers and sisters, that's not easy. You see, the reproach of Christ is everything bad that everybody could say about our Lord Jesus Christ. From the time he was called a blasphemer to the time where they ridiculed him on the cross, to the time the thieves ridiculed him on the cross, to the curse that God spake to Moses, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree. And the Apostle Paul in the third chapter of the book of Galatians says that Jesus Christ became a curse for us. As it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree. That's the reproach of Christ. Now we turn aside, we see this great thing. We become recipients of the reproach of Christ. And we would rather have that than the pleasures of sin for a season. Because with the reproach of Christ comes great reward. People say, well, we all not go to church thinking we're going to get something. Every time I go to church, I'm praying that I get something. And what I pray that I get are the blessings of God. And I know I don't deserve any of them. And I think Moses realized he didn't deserve any of it. But God doesn't move on what we deserve by our own merits. He looks for the blood. And he's seen the blood. And he's satisfied with the blood. And now when we turn aside, unworthy though we are, he blesses us with his reward. And no, it's not heaven and immortal glory. That's not what this verse is talking about. I'm telling you what, heaven and immortal glory is our end result, right? When we pass from this life or in the morning of the resurrection, heaven and immortal glory. My friends, but that's not a reward. That's an inheritance. That's something that we already have. A reward is something that we get when we do something. So when I come to church and I realize just how unworthy I am, then I just think, I pray God he sees the blood and that he overlooks my unworthiness and that he blesses me with the choicest blessings that he might provide me. And not just when I am called on to preach, but when I get to sit. Because you can ask your pastor, we just don't get to sit that much anymore. But when we do, that's again when I get really excited about the reward that God might have in store for me. Because maybe there's a lot of things that I stand in need of, and he blesses me with that. So what about poor old Moses? You didn't get to go in. You want to see the mercy of God in dealing with the unworthiness of his children? He takes Moses up Mount Nebo and then stands him on the top of Pisgah. And he says, here it is, Moses. Here's my reward that I promised to your father Abraham. You're not going to go in, but I wanted you to see it. You don't get that reward. But Moses, I'm giving you your inheritance. And Moses died and went to heaven that day. Now, that's a lot better than Canaan's land, right? That's a lot better than Canaan's land. You might say Moses got the better end of the deal, right? But I'm telling you what, until that time comes when we pass from this life, let us turn aside from this world. Let us respect the things of God and not the world. Let us cast aside this world. And though unworthy we are, look for and hasten to the blessings of God's hands in the kingdom of God, in the church of Jesus Christ. He's got blessings untold. And he gives them to us, though we're just as unworthy as Moses was, he still gives them to us in our day and age. May he richly bless and keep you is my prayer.